Hello?
Okay, let's make a fucking podcast.
I think I'm good to go.
Perfect. Oh, you've got a great one to start out, and I kind of just want to jump right into it. This is Idle Curiosities, a search-driven podcast by Seth Reinecke and Jason Hellman. Music by Yuri Beats.
Yeah, that's cool for me. I mean, I put it in there because... I just cleared this one with my wife before putting it in. I was like, hey, if I talk about this on the podcast, is it going to be like one of those things where our kid talks to a therapist about it and we get in a bunch of trouble with like a social worker or something? And she's like, no, it's cool. Nobody listens to your podcast, so it's fine.
Hey, I'll have her know we're up to a whole 35 estimated listeners.
Hey, she's one of them. So let's take that down a notch to 34.
Damn. All right, so let's get started. Tell me about your first search string, ant bite penis.
I mean, I was going to do like a whole build up to this, but what happened was I was in the shower. I got a phone call. It was from my brother-in-law who was staying with us at the time. And he said, you got to come down here because an ant bit your son's penis. And I was like, surely I heard that wrong. But I really didn't. I came downstairs and he was wailing because an ant, he was sitting on the sofa and an ant bit his penis. He was just sitting there without pants on and an ant bit him on right on the dick. And it must have hurt so bad. There's nothing I could do, but I did Google what to do if an ant bites your penis.
I'm just, what size ant are we talking about? Because I don't think I've ever been bit by an ant. And I don't know, do you have like different East Coast giant ants or what is this?
No, just normal little like black ant, carpenter ant, I guess. Pretty small, but it doesn't take a lot when they chomp on your penis to make it hurt a whole bunch. I'm guessing. Because again, it has never happened to me, but I guess my son is just extremely lucky.
So what do you end up doing? Anything?
Well, you pull the ant off, and then your child screams bloody murder for about 30 full minutes. And then you put Neosporin on it, and it's like really not a big deal. But an ant bit my kid on the dick, and it was awful. And I Googled ant bite penis, and I don't know what I expected there to be like on the internet. There were some things. None of them were terribly helpful. But yeah, they're like... ants got little jaws and they can bite, and if they bite you on the penis, it's gonna hurt because they've got powerful jaws.
I don't think I've ever been bit by an ant, so it's so hard for me to conceptualize what that even is.
It's probably like if an ant bites your arm, it's probably like, it probably feels like, I don't know, like less than a bee sting, more than, I don't
like
know,
a mosquito.
Like more than a mosquito bite. But like if that ant bites your penis, it's going to hurt because it's right on your dick and it's going to hurt so much. And if you're three and you don't understand what's going on and why your penis hurts, it's going to be confusing on top of all that. Anyway, I have strong feelings about this. I hope it never happens again. But an ant did bite my child on the penis.
I feel like being Jewish, you probably have some opinions about children. And
well, you know, the circumcision... They're 8 days old. They give you a little wine to, like, you know, get you loosey-goosey. So you're kind of like, oh, whatever. And it's a very sharp blade that does it. Like, if you've ever seen an ant mandible under a microscope, it's not like a clean – it's not going to be a clean bite like a
Jason.
Like a surgeon's scalpel would be. It's a serrated oh. –
I think you know for sure that I've never seen an ant mandible under a microscope.
Okay, I haven't either, but I have seen the movie Ant-Man, which is close-ish to, I think, scientific evidence for if an ant bites your penis, it's going to hurt, especially if you're 3 years old.
I'm going to need a fact check.
Nobody fact check this. This is all bad. I'm so sorry. My future child, if you're listening to this, but an ant did bite you on the penis when you were three. And we were terrified when it happened. But, you know, everything turned out fine and you're all good. You're a beautiful little human being. And I hope this doesn't ruin you forever. Okay, let's go to the next one. I'm done talking about this. I just thought I needed to include it because when you look in your search history and it says ant bite penis and you have a podcast about things that you've searched for, it's I think mandatory that you talk about it.
No, that makes sense.
Okay. I'm out of breath because I feel like I just talked a lot about this. So
let me take some of that off of you. What do you want to know about?
I want you to talk now. You searched for Allie Brosh.
Of course.
Who is a person that I loved and thought disappeared for a long time, but if you search for her, maybe she didn't?
Of course, we all know Allie Brosh as being the incredible, incredible, wonderful author of Hyperbole and a Half. And if you don't know what Hyperbole and a Half is, listeners, what the fuck? And also, it's like a comic book essay collection where it's like these really shitty drawings that are also like kind of weird and wholesome. And oh man, you're right. I need to work on selling stuff because this is bad.
I think what most people would know her work from is the cartoon of the girl in the pink dress with a broom in the air that says clean all the things. And I think all the things kind of became, I hate saying the word meme out loud with like my human mouth, but it kind of did become that. And that was her.
Yeah. So Allie has a new book coming out in September called Solutions and Other Problems, which is great, wonderful, big news because everybody thought that Allie had dropped off of the face of the earth.
So, cool.
So I think we're all just pretty, pretty excited, pretty stoked. So yeah, I was Googling because it was relevant to a conversation I was having the other day, and I just wanted everybody to know specifically where they could go pre-order it. And yes, there will be a link in show notes.
Oh, that's a red. I found out like a decade ago, like when she was active, I have like a friend of a friend who I believe went to college with her in Ohio, which like isn't anything but me talking about people I know, but I should reach back out to that person and see like what the deal is. I don't know. Cut this out. That's stupid.
Okay. No, I'll cut it out. I'll definitely cut it out. Hey, listeners, I cut that out, right? Tell Jason I cut that out.
Yeah. It's all gone. I'm definitely not deriving any like personal validation from knowing somebody who knows somebody who did a cool thing one time.
No, of course not. And you know what else would be completely cool?
Mm-hmm.
A 90-day fiancé kidnapping.
Yeah. All right. This I'm ready to talk about. 90-day fiancé. What do you know about it? Tell me everything you know about 90-day fiancé.
I believe that it's a reality show. I'm going to guess it's on something like, you know, Oxygen or TLC.
All right. You got it in two. It is TLC.
Oh, hallelujah. Yes.
The show is primarily people who want to be on reality TV. Secondarily, people who want to get married. And thirdly, people who are actually like in love with each other. So my wife turned me on to the show and oh boy, does it satisfy my appetite for complete dog shit garbage TV. And there's a man on there who goes to Russia and he's got a girlfriend. And like this kind of meta conversation happened as we're watching the show because my wife knows like, oh, this is the guy who kidnapped his girlfriend and got arrested for it. And then we just like watched the whole season of TV with this guy who we know is a real piece of shit.
So wait. I guess we need to rewind a little bit more because I need to know a little bit more about the format of the show.
Okay.
It's not like Queer Eye where every episode is a new 90-day fiancé. It's a full season covering, what, one or two 90-day fiancés? How does that work?
Like five 90-day fiancés. So there's the thing called a K-1 visa. And if you get engaged to a person from another country, they can become eligible for this visa, which would let them move to the United States. And the whole show's premise is like there's all these people who are in these relationships where the K-1 visa is like in play. And like as a viewer, you're supposed to, I think, what's the right way to put it? You're supposed to like pretend that all of these people are pursuing real relationships. And the fact that all of this is on TV has nothing to do with it. But in reality, like obviously that's not the case. And part of the pleasurable experience you get from viewing it is like picking out like who the real people are who are truly pursuing a relationship and who this man is. Oh, fuck, I don't even know his first name anymore. He sucks so hard. He goes there and he's just mean to this Russian lady. And it, like the whole time you're thinking, I really hope this person isn't the one who got kidnapped by him. But yeah, that's 90 Day Fiancé. It's terrible garbage, but I kind of love it.
So is the person on the show the person who got kidnapped?
I don't know. I tried to figure it out.
That feels like something that I would want to know if I were watching those episodes.
Yeah. I want to know a lot of things about 90 Day Fiancé that I just don't. But you kind of let the garbage juice wash over you as you're watching the show and kind of have to become resigned to the fact that, like, it's all just kind of shit and you're just along for the ride a little bit.
So not that different from watching Chip and Joanna.
What's Chip and Joanna? That's not even on your list.
No, I'm HGTV. I don't know what their show is called. The fucking Chip and Joanna Gaines. They've got that line of bullshit at Target.
I don't know anything Fixer about Upper. This.
I think it's called Fixer Upper. I don't know. I can't stand them. It's garbage television where you just have to let the garbage wash over you. And I can't let the garbage wash over me.
No, can't you do should it. Try. It's a little bit like... it's this sweet release, almost what I imagine death feels like, where it's like, oh, I guess this is just happening to me and there's nothing I can do about it, when I could just pick up the remote and like change it. But you just kind of choose not to. And then, you know, sometimes you fall asleep on the couch to it and wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I feel like I hit my garbage quota for the year watching The Circle.
And ooh.
Not just watching The Circle, but watching the US season of The Circle, and then the UK seasons of The Circle, and then the Brazilian season of The Circle, and then the French season of The Circle. Like, I am caught up on The Circle.
You went so much deeper than me. I watched the US one, and I enjoyed, I already forget everything about it. Strong purple guy. The man who didn't know the eggplant was a standard for a penis. Joey.
I cannot comprehend that somebody who looks like Joey could possibly not know what the eggplant emoji represents.
I'm fully convinced that was kind of an act. That was like, you know, it could be anything. Could be eggplant parmesan. It could be eggplant, like just the fruit. But no, it's a dick.
If you do ever want to watch more of The Circle, season 2 of the UK series is by far the best season of The Circle so far.
All right. I'll add it to the list of shows to hate myself while I watch.
One of the like main cast who you get to know pretty well, he's a former priest or monk, I don't remember which, and he just kind of looks like Santa Claus. And he has his own YouTube channel where he just, like, explains theology and philosophy.
Oh, I like that.
And he is by far the best reality show contestant I think I have ever seen.
Hmm.
I just, everything he did made me love him more.
Did he win? Well, I mean, spoilers for, I guess, The Circle season 2. I'm telling you, I'm not going to watch it.
I honestly don't think I should say whether he wins or not on the show, but I'll say that he's there for a large chunk of the season at least, and you really get to enjoy him, and if you're watching the season for him, you won't be disappointed in how much of him you get.
Hmm. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4 things on your list where, like, I kind of know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I also kind of want to know why you Googled them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of ended up being a theme putting together the list this week, just because you and I have been part of a lot of the same conversations this week, and a lot has happened, and life has kind of blown up in its own small little ways. The elephant in the room, of course, this week is Cards Against Humanity and Max Temkin being outed as an incredibly shitty boss who was shitty to all of his employees, especially his, you know, black employees. and his female employees. So, like, that's the big elephant in the room, and we've both been part of a lot of conversations that center around that, and that's kind of informed some of my searches.
Yeah, so why don't you, like, go off on Kevin Budnick Patreon and why everybody should give him money?
Sure. So, Kevin Budnick, I was introduced to through the podcast Due by Friday. Due by Friday is Alex Cox, Merlin Mann, and Max Temkin. Max Temkin this week was, as I just said, outed as kind of a bit of a shitbag. And it's kind of blown up everyone's lives that's involved with Due by Friday or Cards Against Humanity in a really shitty way.
And we should say, like, the entire reason we know each other is through the community based around the show.
Yeah, we know each other because of the Due by Friday podcast Discord. So I know Kevin Budnick's work because he did the artwork for the Due by Friday podcast. And even if you just Google Due by Friday and look at that artwork, you'll go, oh yeah, no, Kevin is really fucking good at his job.
It's like perfectly cartoony is the way I would describe it. He does these slice of life comics of like basically what happened in his life that day. And it's so like, he doesn't put a line there that he doesn't need. And it just like fully captures this like really cool, like it's a way in which I wish I could draw, which is to say like simple and elegant. And also, you know exactly what's going on in each panel.
Exactly. Yeah. His thing is diary comics, where he's documenting his day every day through a comic. And those are on his Patreon. If you subscribe to his Patreon at even $2 a month, I believe is the lowest level, you can see his daily diary comics where he just kind of like taps into humanity in a really beautiful, meaningful, empathetic way that I really, really appreciate. And it's a great time to back Kevin's Patreon as well, because it looks like he just quit his job at Cards Against Humanity in light of the whole Max scandal. And I really feel for him. He shouldn't have to be punished or going through shit because he had an abusive, shitty, shitty boss. So go give Kevin your money, please.
Yeah, toss him some money. $2 a month is not a lot of money, but it means a lot to people who are creators.
Yeah,
I would assume. As somebody who's never created anything in my life, I can only make that assumption.
What the fuck do you think you're doing here?
This is like kind of something. This is just me spouting off nonsense, but he does like real art.
I will not stand for that disparagement of the pristine, wonderful, prestigious Idle Curiosities brand. That's Idle Curiosities. Look it up.
It's a thing.
I don't need to plug it on the show. Okay. So I think we've solidly crossed through Kevin Budnick and gotten through the sad portion of the show. So in order to bring us up out of the sad portion of the show, I'm going to go into your search, La Vie en Rose.
Yeah, this is a song. It's like an old standard.
So I'm actually going to interrupt you and ask you, which version of La Vie en Rose were you looking for, and which version did you know first?
The version, I don't know. Edith Piaf, is that somebody who sang the original?
That sounds approximately like the artist who did the original.
I think hers is the first version I ever heard, but the version I heard when I searched for this. I believe what was happening was I was playing video games late at night, and sometimes I get in a mood where I'm like, I just want to be sad, but a little bit happy.
And, oh, yeah.
And I had seen the movie A Star is Born with Lady Gaga and
of course
Bradley Cooper, who is from my hometown, and thought, you know what would make me really sad and happy at the same time is listening to Lady Gaga sing La Vie en Rose. So okay. I did, and it made me cry, and then I listened to it like four more times. And she does a kick-ass job just like belting this standard.
I still haven't seen A Star is Born, and honestly, I probably should just because it's so big in the cultural like space. Like, everyone's talked about it. Everybody's seen it. I feel like I need to join in on that. So I haven't heard Lady Gaga's version yet.
It's like the song, I think the song is great. I think the movie is fine. The last third is depressing and not like in a way that I find appealing. Like, you know, I'm all for like sad, depressing movies, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think I had the ending spoiled for me already.
Yeah, it's like, it's okay, but holy shit, Lady Gaga sings La Vie en Rose, and like, it just is extremely moving. So I found myself, I believe, playing Overwatch, and I'd lost a few games in a row, and I was feeling sorry for myself, and I was sitting at my computer desk thinking, what would make me sadder? And the answer was listening to Lady Gaga sing La Vie en Rose, and so that's what I did.
I can think of nothing sadder than just like, a 30-year-old parent sitting at their desk.
35.
Losing at Overwatch and listening to La Vie en Rose on repeat.
It's like a Tim and Eric sketch. It's so stupid.
Can I make a recommendation for you?
Yeah.
I did not know La Vie en Rose until last February when Lucy Dacus did a cover of it for Valentine's Day. Lucy Dacus, probably most famously known for being in Boy Genius with Phoebe Bridgers and Julian Baker. She did just a beautiful, beautiful cover of La Vie en Rose that I have heard so many times at this point. I absolutely adore it.
All right, I'm queuing it up in Spotify now. Yeah, I just, you know, sometimes a 12-year-old shoots you with virtual bullets over and over again until you feel like crying to a French song about something you have no business relating to. And that's just what you do for the rest of your night.
And that's what we call a midlife crisis. And speaking of things that happen midway through a thing, let's go to our sponsor.
Oh, we have sponsors?
No.
No, we don't.
Are you kidding me? Today is brought to you by Extreme Restraints. Extreme Restraints. Stick that in your dick.
Oh, in your dick? I'm rejecting the sponsor. I don't know if I have that kind of power, but don't put things, you know, if you want to, put things in your dick if you want to. That's going to be, that's my tagline for this episode.
I'd just say that it's not a very sound idea.
Oh, no. Don't do that.
If we don't drop in Bim Bam references every episode, how will people know that we're cool?
By my sultry voice. Okay, so we talked about some music things, and I see a music thing on your list that
Oh my goodness, yes.
So you searched for If I Like Blackpink, and I do. So tell me why.
Oh.
Wait, what were you thinking of?
I thought you were going to go for the other music-related term.
You're thinking of the other one. No. I want to hear about Blackpink because I don't care about John Roderick's music. I just want to hear about K-pop.
No, that's fine. So, Blackpink. I found Blackpink a couple years ago. I have no idea how I stumbled across them. But I just kind of really, really fell in love with the record that they have out, which is called Blackpink in Your Area, which is, I mean, it's a non-stop hit parade. It's 9 tracks in 32 minutes. And the entire time, it is non-stop hits. And so, that's about all I know of K-pop. Like, I've heard some BTS, and I don't really care for BTS. Like, there's something about the girl group aesthetic specifically that appeals to me. And, like, they really write within trap beats and, like, really big, like, pop and hip-hop production. So, yeah, I was just kind of trying to find something, anything that sounds like Blackpink so I can just kind of, you know, expand my K-pop knowledge.
I've kind of been down the avenue that I think you went down, and what I found was there's almost nothing like it because of exactly what you said. It is just like this non-stop driving beat. It's so listenable, and they're really charming in a way that shouldn't appeal to me as a too old American man. But man, they say boombayah, and I'm just like, yeah, you're right, boombayah.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, that musical hook right in the middle of boombayah is so good, and it's not something I'm hearing in American pop right now.
No, American pop now is about being sad and lonely, and Lana Del Rey is in charge.
Oh, and I hope that ends soon.
I like Lana Del Rey. If I want to feel sad, I'll listen to, you know, she's good at making you feel sad. And if you want to make yourself feel sad, you listen to Lana Del Rey. And if you want to make yourself feel good, you listen to Carly Rae Jepsen.
Lana's fine. I recently created a big 2-hour long playlist of my favorite like pop and rock songs of the past few years. And I do end that with Lana Del Rey's Hope is a Dangerous Thing for a Woman Like Me to Have. Just because, I mean, come on. That's a track.
That's a good song.
But also on that playlist, I have Doo 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 by Blackpink.
Doo 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 Doo. No, wait, that's Boombayah. That's the same song.
But I have Doo 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 sandwiched between Rodeo by Lil Nas X and Heaven Help Me by Lizzo.
Ooh, those are both good songs.
That's about where I kind of view Blackpink in the like musical sphere right now. It's kind of in between those two artists in a lot of ways.
I could see that.
Like, it's big and it's feminine, but it's also weirdly aggressive and it goes places you wouldn't expect. But yeah, so I was trying to find other artists that kind of sound like Blackpink, and I came across two artists that I have really liked.
Hit me.
The first one is called Everglow.
These all go on a real-time playlist that I make, because not only are we podcast partners, but I just like Seth's taste in things.
Aw. But yeah, Everglow's big single is called Bon Bon Chocolate. The music video for that is incredible. The production's just giant. It's huge. It's catchy. It's infectious. And they have a total of 10 songs that they've ever released.
That strikes me as kind of like a K-pop thing, that a band can just have 10 songs and that's it. And nobody's like, well, where's the rest of it? I found like one or two American artists that do kind of a similar thing, but it's mostly been through like Spotify recommendations.
So I really liked Everglow. I would recommend Everglow. And if you want one more, I found one. I actually don't know how it's supposed to be pronounced or if it's supposed to be pronounced, but it's AOA. Which is another K-pop girl group. They're not quite as big as these other two, but I really like the way that their albums are named on Spotify, because their most recent album is called AOA First Album Angels Knock.
That's some powerful album naming energy.
It is perfectly descriptive, and I think everybody should aspire to that.
Do you think next will be AOA's second album, The Devil Rings Your Doorbell?
The Devil Knocks Twice. I would hope not. But that's a pretty good album. It's a lot more traditional pop than the like trap influences that I loved from Blackpink. But it's still energetic, it's still big, it's still out there. It's still like definitively a girl group. And so I would definitely recommend them as well. Not quite as wholeheartedly as I recommended Everglow, however.
All right, Everglow's going to the top of the list.
You know, in case anybody wanted K-pop recommendations from a 29-year-old.
Again, 35 over here.
Ugh.
It sucks. Don't get to be, I mean, like, get to be 35, because the alternative is not great. But I find myself so out of touch on any given day that it's a little bit upsetting.
So I'm actually going to go ahead and break format a little and say my other big musical search term that I had this week was The Commander Thinks Aloud, which is a song by The Long Winters, which is John Roderick of Roderick on the Line, his band. It's a perfect song. I didn't really know it before listening to the Song Exploder episode about it a couple weeks ago. And ever since, I've just had the bridge and ending of that track in my head nonstop.
It's such a good story song, and I feel like that's not a format that's really flourished. Like, it can either be really good or really bad.
Like, outside of folk music, it hasn't really taken off in a lot of ways. Like, folk music and, like, what's his name? Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, yeah. I guess he's got story songs. But his is more like, you know, I'm a working class dude, and I got some slag in my eye.
But yeah, I like The Commander Thinks Aloud a lot. I highly recommend it if you don't know it. Go listen to the Song Exploder episode about it. It's 15 minutes. And John Roderick is such a articulate and thoughtful person when he's talking about his music. and the way that he describes what the song is about and what they did to make it and where he had hang-ups in writing and recording it really makes the song hit different when you finally do hear it in full.
And it's just a good-ass song.
It's so good. So yeah, I guess on our quest to become more like Bim Bam, we've now talked about the Long Winters. So I guess I need to ask you about something now, don't I?
Yeah, you did. You like...
I just kind of shoehorned in too, yeah.
You cheated and you did too.
Yeah. So I guess I'm going to ask you about... You know, it's been a pretty dark episode, and I think we should just stick to that. And it feels like the vibe on this one is probably going to be pretty dark. So I'm going to ask about Levi Cohen special prayers.
This one is not going to be dark. I'm going to make this one cool as hell.
Hell yeah.
All right. So Levi Cohen special prayers, it may surprise people now that we have like professional show art. When they see the professional show art, they're going to see Seth on the left and me on the right. And
provided by the extremely wonderful Katie Rose. Katie, thank you so much. We love the art.
Katie rules, and I've used that picture everywhere. I put a picture of myself up in place of my actual photographic face because it's so much better than what my face looks like. So if people see that picture, they're going to be like, oh, look, it's a Jew. And they'd be right. And I can't remember the exact conversation I was having, but I was talking to somebody about like weird Jewish minutia and how there are some things I really dig about just like these ancient rites that have survived so many millennia. When I say so many, I mean like two, I guess, because millennia is a long time. But one of those things I was trying to like convey is that if you're in synagogue and there's a special need for like a blessing, there are people who have the last name like Levi or Levi or Cohen, and that signifies like you come from a specific tribe of Israel. Sure. And like if in like modern day 2020 you have that last name, basically your synagogue will assume like, oh, you're a Levi or a Cohen, which means you are like of the priestly class, which means you can perform this special prayer. And it just seems it's one of those things where it's like it's literally survived like thousands of years. There are not that many in the United States left of like people with this last name. And it's just wild that it's a tradition that has lasted so long. And I'm like so disconnected from my own organized religion as a thing. But to like, it just always strikes me as like, huh, okay. Like we're just going to make these special rules for these people who have this last name. And that's kind of how we do this.
So what happens when you walk into the synagogue and say, hey, my name's Hellman?
They say you're a German Jew and like join the club. Like you're not that special.
Well, asked and answered.
Yeah. But the real reason I always find this interesting to talk to people about is Leonard Nimoy borrowed the Vulcan salute from if I fuck this up and my mom or dad ever listens to this, they're going to be so mad at me. But I want to say it's the Kohen. There's a special, the Kohens were like the priestly class. And I believe he borrowed the Vulcan salute from this like special Kohen prayer where you take your pinky and your ring finger and your index and your middle finger and you space them out separately from your thumb and you like lay hands on the person you are blessing. And Leonard Nimoy just fucking ripped that shit off and was like, this is space sci-fi nonsense now. But I remember being in synagogue as a kid and looking on like this plaque and it had the hands in the Vulcan salute. And I was like, oh shit, my synagogue must be cool as hell. They're putting a plaque in the Vulcan salute.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, like it's such a cool like pop culture thing. And one step further is that I happened to go to a synagogue where Leonard Nimoy did like a spoken word reading of his poetry book, I think. And I just so wanted to go up to him and be like, you should come with me because there is, let me show you this plaque with the Vulcan salute where I looked at it and went, yo, I know what this is about. Leonard Nimoy told me about this.
So I feel like this is going to get me some flack because I don't know this, but was Leonard Nimoy Jewish? Or I guess is? I don't even know if he's alive. Oh, God.
I don't know either, but I almost said extremely, but that would get me in trouble because you can't be extremely Jewish. You either are or you aren't, but...
Now, wait a second. Isn't there a thing with, like parentage where, like, if your mother was Jewish and your dad wasn't...
If your mother's Jewish and your dad wasn't, you're Jewish. Like the whole deal with the lineage.
And if both your parents were Jewish, you're extremely Jewish.
No, like it's all, there's no like more or less. It's just you are. It's very bullying. Like it's very computer science-y. You are, you aren't. But like I found out, I guess later in life, hopefully, the reason, and I think this sucks, but maybe it doesn't. The reason that Jewish lineage is traced through your maternal line is because people could just look at you being born and look at your mom and be like, that person was born from that mother. Therefore, we know if the mother was Jewish, the baby is Jewish.
That makes sense.
Yeah, like it's just like some old ass zero technology shit.
Yeah, I can follow that logic.
I hope so. You're 29 years old. I really hope you can understand where it's the basis of it.
There's very little logic I can follow, but I'm with you on this.
Baby comes out of mom. Mom is Jewish. Therefore, baby is Jewish.
Incredible.
All right. I think we can get away with one more each, maybe two.
I think so. We've really pounded through them tonight. I mean, we're, what, 40 minutes in?
We're 40 minutes in, but also this is like we've had a backlog because it's been... a month plus.
This episode's just the best of the best, baby.
This is just, I'm sorry to tell you, Ant Bite Penis was like my golden card that I've been waiting to play for 5+ weeks. All right. So you have, I'm going to read these in, you searched for the name of our show.
I sure did. Do you want to talk about that?
I do. I want to talk about that. You've got other ones, but, like, I know you know what the show is.
Mm-hmm.
So I also want to know why you would Google it.
So this week we kind of officially launched the show. We are now in your podcatchers, which you know if you are hearing this. And as part of launching the show, I just kind of went through and I did some searching around, making sure we weren't going to run into namespace collision. I'd already done that before, but I wanted to double check. It looks like there is one Facebook page that uses the name Idle Curiosities, but they're not a podcast, so fuck them.
Fuck them. Go on their Facebook page, post really offensive stuff.
What we are into with this show is targeted harassment, okay? Yeah.
Cyberbully, whatever Idle Curiosities is, on Facebook, say, you sir... are no Seth and Jason. I know Seth and Jason, and you, sir, are no Seth and Jason. So wait, is that the whole reason you searched for it? Is just to make sure that there's like nobody else squatting on our shit?
No, I also wanted to like talk about, because I wasn't just searching Google for it. I was also searching the various podcast sites and aggregators and distributors. Because once I hit launch on it, it takes time for it to populate onto all those places.
And what if a younger, cooler podcast sprung up between the time we launched episodes 1 and 2 and now?
Well, all week I've just been like refreshing and looking at all of these feeds going, okay, are we on Overcast yet? Are we on Pocket Casts yet? Are we on iTunes yet? We're not. Wait, we are? We are. We are on iTunes. Although Anchor doesn't recognize that we're on iTunes, so please, if you're listening, go rate and review us on iTunes. I'm not going to tell you how to rate or review us. If you want to say bad things, please go right ahead. But if you leave a review of our show, I will donate $5 to a local bail fund. Or if not a bail fund, whatever is relevant when you finally do get around to listening to this episode. But probably a bail fund, because I feel like this whole Black Lives Matter thing got some momentum under it this time. I feel like we might really be going somewhere this time around.
I think Black Lives might actually matter. And it's beyond a slogan. And it's just like a thing that we can all agree is reality.
Now, not all of us. Some people are Republicans.
I choose not to acknowledge that.
Yeah, if you leave us a review on iTunes, I'll donate $5 to a bail fund, because I think it's absolutely absurd that anybody is getting arrested for just wanting basic human rights for people who've been overlooked for far too long.
And bail as a concept, sucks. So
sure does.
I'm with you.
Sure does. So you've got two terms left that we haven't touched on yet tonight, and I think I'm going to go with the most simple, friendly, joyful one to go out on.
They're both good. I want to say I'm going to save one of these for later because they're both good.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to go out on something that's nice and friendly. So tell me about Friendly's watermelon ice cream.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. All right, Friendly's is a Applebee's-like chain of food restaurants. They have an ice cream window. They serve burgers, which aren't great. They serve other hot food, which is kind of not also good. But the one thing Friendly's does extremely well, and my fondest memories are of going to the restaurant with my grandmother, and I would always get one of two things. Thing number one is a traditional ice cream sundae cup. I don't know what you call it. It's like a tall cup that's like tin that would have a scoop of ice cream, and it was made to look like a clown where the cone was the hat and M&Ms were its eyes and nose and mouth.
So they're putting a cone on top of the cup full of ice cream.
Yeah, they're taking the concept of ice cream and they're kind of flipping it and making it kind of wild and weird.
So it kind of looks like the fucked up, terrifying Jack in the Box mascot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. A lot like that. Cool. Except it's made of ice cream, so who gives a shit what it looks like, because it tastes so good. But the other thing that Friendly's does is they make ice cream in the shape of watermelon. It is a half dome, if you can imagine it, where the very outer rim is kind of minty ice cream. Maybe sherbet is a better word for it. And it is like white and green. And then the inner is a pink and black, more sherbety ice cream. And it looks like a slice of watermelon. And you dip into it with your spoon. And it tastes fruity and refreshing and delicious. But it looks like real watermelon. And more novelty ice cream treat makers should be doing real food that looks like ice cream. Nope, opposite. Ice cream that looks like real food.
So you're saying real food that looks like ice cream. So just take a big old scoop of watermelon and put that in a cone.
I said that, but I'm also stupid. So the reverse is the real thing. It should be. We should have more ice cream that looks like real food. So you want key lime pie? No. What you really want is key lime pie flavored ice cream cut out in the shape of a slice of pie.
I just want a nice chocolate ice cream wrapped around a nice like strawberry or cherry ice cream is just kind of like served in like a flat little slab.
What if instead we could make you like some ice cream that was in the shape of a cherry?
You see, I was going for like a medium rare steak.
Oh boy, did I not. I did not come with you there.
Well, in your defense, it is 10:30 p.m. on your end, so I'll cut you a little slack.
I'm very tired. I would love some ice cream, and I'm extremely tired.
In my freezer right now, I have a pint of pistachio.
Is that good? Like,
Ben and Jerry's. Ben and Jerry's.
Is that? I don't know if I've ever had pistachio ice cream. If I'm going to eat green ice cream, it should be mint.
This is one of Ben and Jerry's best flavors.
And it tastes like nuts?
The pistachios have just a little bit of salt on them. So when you get in there and you get a big old chunk of pistachio and you bite into it, it's just like this explosion of flavor. I don't know if you've ever had like pistachio pudding.
I've also not. Pistachios are nuts that you eat. What else are you putting them in?
Desserts. Just all the desserts. Pistachios are a dessert nut.
What if you just ate the nuts?
I mean, you could. But where's the joy in that? Where's the fun in that? Where's the excitement? Where's the flavor?
So in my household, any sort of ice cream with chunks or bits in it is completely forbidden because of the person who I've chosen to spend the rest of my life with. And the reason is, when we get ice cream with, like, so say we get Cherry Garcia or a different ice cream with, you know, like a little like
a fish food or a...
Yeah, like any sort of flavor chunk ice cream. She will dig, like it's a mining operation, and she will dig out those chunks and just leave me the ice cream scraps to eat. Like I should be, and I should be happy with these terrible ice cream scraps after she's cultivated all the little flavor bits. She's like, here you go. I'm done.
Yeah, no, Mel has had that tendency as well.
I'm a strip miner. I strip mine that ice cream.
Oh, yes, exactly.
I take precious layer upon precious layer. I scoop it out with my spoon, and if I get a chunk, great. If not, no big deal.
Because if you eat all the chunks first, then you are robbing yourself of the experience of getting the chunks interspersed and interwoven with the rest of the ice cream for the rest of the pint.
Or you're robbing your cool, handsome husband of that opportunity.
Yeah, you're 35-year-old who listens to K-pop while being killed in Overwatch.